This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Hundreds gathered in Pittsburgh to remember the 11 people shot dead during Sabbath prayers Saturday at the Tree of Life Synagogue. Among those attending the ceremony, Israeli Diaspora Affairs Minister Naftali Bennett.
Jew hating is not a distant memory. It's not a thing of the past, nor a chapter in history books. It is a very real threat. Anti-Semitism is a clear and present danger.
The suspect, Robert Bowers, entered the synagogue armed with an assault rifle and pistol, shouting, "All Jews must die." Six were wounded, including four policemen. Bowers was wounded and taken into custody. Scott Brady is a U.S. federal prosecutor.
Pittsburgh's a strong town. We are a resilient city. We have been knocked down, and we've found ways to stand back up. And we've always done it in one way, by working together.
That's the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Petuto. President Donald Trump Saturday said the scourge of anti-Semitism cannot be ignored, tolerated, or allowed to continue. Scott Brady, a U.S. federal prosecutor.
So our complaint charges Bowers with 29 separate federal crimes. There are 11 counts of murdering victims who are exercising their religious beliefs. There are 11 counts of using a firearm to commit murder, and each of these counts is punishable by death. The final seven counts are based upon the harm inflicted by Bowers upon the brave police officers who, in trying to stop Bowers' rampage, put their own lives in danger.
The synagogue attack came a day after Cesar Sayoc was arrested on suspicion of mailing several explosive devices to prominent Democrats. Nigerian defense officials said at least one soldier was killed when Boko Haram militants attacked a military base in northeast Borno State Saturday into Sunday, one of the several attacks on bases near the Lake Chad region in recent months. This is VOA News. A new caravan from El Salvador is moving its way northward to the U.S. border. A second is moving up from Guatemala. A much larger caravan that left Honduras 2 weeks ago has made its way to southern Mexico with an estimated 3,500 people. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen appeared on Fox News Sunday.
I think what the president has been saying and will continue to say, and certainly what I have been saying, is this caravan is not getting in. There is a legal way to enter this country. Those who choose to enter illegally will be stopped. We are working with our partners in Mexico. They have taken unprecedented efforts within their territory to ensure an orderly flow and that those who have no legal right to be there are removed.
President Donald Trump has threatened to close the border. The U.S. has moved troops and other military assets to the region to bolster Border Patrol officials. Social Liberal Party lawmaker Jair Bolsonaro easily won the presidential runoff in Brazil, taking more than 55% of the vote to leftist Workers' Party hopeful Fernando Haddad's 45%. Supporters set off fireworks near his Rio de Janeiro home late Sunday. Protesters marched against the victory of the rightist Bolsonaro, a former army officer who's vowed harsh measures to crack down on corruption and crime. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said during a meeting with Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir, a transparent investigation into the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul is needed.
Need for transparency, full and complete investigation, full agreement from Foreign Minister Jubeir, no reservations at all. I said we need to know what happened, and it was very collaborative and agreement.
Mattis said Turkey, with evidence that it has compiled, will ensure there is more than one review of what took place. At least three Palestinians were killed Sunday following an Israeli airstrike on southeast Gaza Strip. Israel said the attack instead targeted the border fence where Palestinians were placing an explosive device. Defense Secretary Mattis, speaking in Prague, said the U.S. is consulting with its European allies on the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces, or INF, treaty after President Trump signaled he's prepared to pull out the treaty over Russian violations. Moscow denies the charge. In Syria, Turkish forces bombarded U.S.-backed Kurdish rebels on the eastern shore of the Euphrates River in the north, coming 2 days after President Erdogan issued what he called a final warning to those who endanger Turkey's borders. Syrian officials, among others, opened Sunday a wing of Syria's National Museum in Damascus, more than 6 years after opposition forces drew close to the capital, forcing its closure. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's July election failed to meet international standards.
Particularly given Zimbabwe's history of irregular elections and electoral violence, extraordinary measures needed to be taken to overcome that past. Unfortunately, these elections did not quite make the mark.
Jessica Keegan is co-director of two U.S. pro-democracy groups' election observer mission to Zimbabwe. Cameroon's Roman Catholic bishops are divided over whether the October 7th election was free and fair. There's a new court in the Central African Republic to fight against impunity. And King Mswati III of Eswatini appoints a new prime minister, but the opposition is not impressed.
We are talking about a political system that is decaying. Whether you have a new prime minister or what, I don't see any changes, especially because of the economic crunch facing the country.
Mpalana Shange is a member of Eswatini's banned opposition Pudemo Party. Liberian President George Weah officially launches a pro-poor agenda, and Kenyan Airways makes its maiden flight direct from Nairobi to New York City. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. pro-democracy groups, the International Republican Institute, IRI, and the National Democratic Institute, NDI, said Zimbabwe has yet to establish a democratic culture in which parties are treated equitably and citizens can cast their vote freely. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
In a joint statement, the International Republican Institute, IRI, and the National Democratic Institute, NDI observer group to Zimbabwe's July 2018 election said the country had shown substantive incremental improvements from its previous flawed elections that were characterized by violence. A co-director of the two U.S. pro-democracy group's election observer mission, Jessica Keegan, said her groups noticed a public commitment to credible elections through a more open political climate, welcoming of international observers, and a fresh biometric voters' roll.
Unfortunately, they were insufficient to instill broad confidence among the populace that the elections met international standards. Particularly given Zimbabwe's history of irregular elections and electoral violence, extraordinary measures needed to be taken to overcome that past. And unfortunately, these elections did not quite make the mark. There were other issues that raised very serious concerns, such as reports of intimidation and violence and the misuse of state resources. And of course, the tragic events of August 1st, where six civilians died as a result of excessive use of force.
The observer groups offered 20 recommendations to Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to ensure the country's future elections are credible. Zimbabwe Electoral Commission spokesman Kubani Moyo was asked for comment on the Election Observer Mission report.
I don't know, I'm not ready. I'm not even going to read it. I'm not even focusing on this thing. I'm doing my family and everything. Maybe we can try the chairperson.
Zimbabwe Electoral Commission chairperson Priscilla Chigumba could not be reached for comment about the report. The two groups observer team was led by former Liberian president Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and former interim president of the Central African Republic, Catherine Samba Panza. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Cameroon's Roman Catholic Church, the country's main religious body, has issued conflicting comments on the conduct of the October 7th presidential election, in which incumbent Paul Biya was declared the winner. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Church bells ring at Our Lady of Victory's Cathedral in Yaoundé, inviting Catholics to a mass to be said by Metropolitan Archbishop Jean Mbarga. Mbarga says the special mass is to pray for peace in Cameroon and salute the victory of President Paul Biya in Cameroon's October 7 presidential election.
La première chose qui convient en ce moment, c'est de féliciter le candidat élu
He says people should congratulate Paul Biya for his victory, especially as electoral disputes were handled in a transparent manner by the Constitutional Council. He says everyone should recognize Biya as the president-elect, start preparing for the next election, and thank God for the peace that was observed during the presidential poll. The Archbishop's declaration that the election was transparent sharply contradicts the position of the Episcopal Conference of Cameroon Roman Catholic Bishops, of which Mbarga is a member. Samuel Kleda, Archbishop of Douala and president of the Episcopal Conference, had criticized the election, saying that the large turnout announced by the elections management body ELECAM along Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria was particularly suspicious.
Canova aujourd'hui que ces gens ont voté pour ce qui les dirige actuellement.
Kleda says he is surprised at claims that the ruling party candidate Paul Biya scored overwhelming victories in many parts of Cameroon, including the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions, where they themselves said they were unable to go to campaign because of galloping insecurity. Cameroon's Roman Catholic bishops have been divided before, even though it has never been as public as it is now. When the separatist movement in the Anglophone regions became violent, Kleda condemned the government troops for brutality, while some bishops, including Barga, said it was legitimate defense. An estimated 35% of Cameroon's 24 million people are of the Roman Catholic faith. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
An official of the banned opposition Pudemo Party in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, says the appointment of a new prime minister will bring little change to a country with a crumbling political system and declining economy. Umphalane Shangwe of Pudemo's National Executive Committee was reacting to King Mswati III's appointment of Ambrose Dlamini, chief executive of the local unit of the telecoms group MTN, as the new prime minister. He replaces Sibu Sisso Dlamini, who died last month. Shangwe says had the king followed the country's constitution, he would not be asking the ancestors or the heavens to help him choose a new prime minister. But he says Prime Minister Dlamini could make a difference if he can first deal with Eswatini's constitutional crisis, human rights abuses, and engage the people in a dialogue.
We are talking about a political system that is decaying and there is no quick fix. Now, whether you have a new prime minister or what, I don't see any changes, especially because of the economic crunch facing the country. The country is faced with a huge financial constraint.
The king, speaking to his supporters on Saturday, said that God or the heavens told him that the person he was going to appoint should have the support of the people of Eswatini. What do you make of that?
You know, this is an old practice that has been taking place in the country. The usage of religion and our culture, ancestors, so to say. Now, in modern politics, you do not see these issues helping an economy. In actual fact, you do not expect God or the ancestors to assist you in giving you the prime minister. But one thing of note that we at the Progressive probably noted was the attempt to open up, although it is not really to open up. You know, a system that has run its time, it is not possible to have quick fix it. Swaziland is faced with a constitutional crisis. Imagine the issue. How can a king request assistance from the people to assist him in choosing a prime minister? Yet the constitution clearly spells it out who is supposed to assist him choose a prime minister. If we were practicing the party system, he would not be having this sleepless night about who to choose as prime minister.
So if you were to speak directly to the new prime minister, Mr. Dlamini, what would you like for him to say on the first day that he will talk to the people of Eswatini.
If you intend improving the economy of this country, you first have to start with attending to the constitutional crisis that has direct bearing to the economy of the country. The human rights abuse has come to an end. Dialogue, it's very, very, very important. As we speak, teachers are on go slow and they are going on the strike on the 23. To me, really, all the Prime Minister has to do is open up, start a new page on the political system and see how we can navigate towards a multi-party system. Without doing that, the angels and the ancestors won't be there to help him.
The new Prime Minister, Mr. Dlamini, is chief executive of the local unit of the telecom group MTN. Is there a possibility of a conflict of interest here?
Yes. Where the king has shares, where one of the prince, who is a senator now, is a director there or whatever, a board member there. And there is a possibility of colluding with whosoever will be there at the MTN. Because the whole idea of choosing somebody from the corporate world is to get money for the king.
Thank you very much again. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pat. You're always welcome.
Mpalana Shangwe is a member of the National Executive Committee of Eswatini's banned opposition Pudemo Party. You're speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today's Monday, October 29th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The UN Human Rights Office says it welcomes the establishment of a special criminal court in the Central African Republic, calling it a milestone in the fight against impunity. Lisa Schlein reports from the agency's headquarters in Geneva.
Over the past 6 years, war between the mainly Muslim Seleka rebels and Christian anti-Balaka has killed thousands. It has displaced about one quarter of Central African Republic's population of 4.6 million, both internally and as refugees. Violence and gross human rights violations are rampant throughout the country. The UN Human Rights Office sees the establishment of the Special Criminal Court as a huge step toward ending decades of recurring violence and abuse in the country. Spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani tells VOA it is hoped prosecutions by the court will help break the cycle of impunity, which has plunged the country into one conflict after another.
The establishment of this court, which its mandate is also to ensure that its proceedings are carried out in a very public way, which should send a message to the perpetrators of human rights violations in the Central African Republic that this will no longer be tolerated. In addition, the International Criminal Court is also engaged on the Central African Republic, so both courts will be working concurrently.
The so-called hybrid court is composed of 13 judges from the CAR and 12 international judges. It will investigate and prosecute serious crimes, in particular the crime of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes committed in the country since January 1, 2003. The pattern of granting blanket amnesties throughout its history has allowed impunity to thrive in CAR at the expense of the rule of law. The United Nations says the court aims to support a durable reconciliation process and bring justice to the victims. It says these actions might finally succeed in bringing peace and stability to the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Liberian President George Weah has officially launched his pro-poor development agenda that he says will lift Liberians out of poverty over the next 5 years. Mr. Weah unveiled the program Saturday in the northern provincial city of Ganta in Nimba County. Moses Gazier will report.
When President George Weah gave his first address to the nation during his inauguration on January 22 this year, he promised to run a government that will lift Liberians out of poverty. He described his vision as pro-poor. On Saturday, Mr. Weah outlined a five-year pro-poor development agenda for prosperity. He said the agenda is tailored around the UN Sustainable Development Goals, African Union Agenda 2063, and the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS Vision 2020.
It is the second in a series of plans leading towards Goals of Vision 2030. And this aligns our national plan with the African Union Agenda 2063 and the Global Sustainable Development Goals the SDGs. Over the next 5 years, we will develop our country, unite and reconcile our people, educate and develop our youths, and promote peace and human rights.
President Weah said rural infrastructure topped the list of many priorities. He appealed to Liberians to own this purple development agenda.
I urge my fellow Liberians to buy into this plan and take ownership of it so that Liberia will become the sweet land of liberty that we all deserve.
Meanwhile, the government says the purple agenda for prosperity and development is intended to lift Liberians out of poverty through various economic diversification programs. Samuel Twe is Liberian Minister for Finance and Development Planning. Minister Twe outlined the provision of affordable electricity, massive agricultural production, and manufacturing as key areas that will see Liberia limit borrowing in the next 5 years. Making remarks at the ceremony, United Nations Resident Coordinator Yakub Ehilo lauded the government of Liberia for the purple agenda.
Now that the PAPD is being launched today by His Excellency President George Manuel Weah, we at the United Nations are going to immediately amend and produce a new framework for UN development assistance in Liberia to be totally aligned with the pro-poor agenda for prosperity and development.
Liberians have seen many five-year development programs put forth by previous governments, including former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Leave Liberia, and Agenda for Transformation. Will George Weah's pro-poor agenda for prosperity and development make difference in the lives of Liberians that people will know in 5 years? Moses Gazel, VOA Daybreak Africa, Ganta, Liberia.
A Kenyan Airways flight took off last night from Jomo Kenyatta International Airport on a maiden flight bound for New York City. It is the first in Eastern Central Africa and perhaps the fifth African airlines to fly direct to the United States. Officials say the direct flight will help boost Kenya's tourism industry and ease long flights from Kenya to the United States and vice versa. Reporter Maureen Ojiambo joins us now from Nairobi.
Actually, President Uhuru Kenyatta was among the dignitaries in the country that flagged off the first ever in history of Kenya KQ flight to USA at around 11 p.m. East African time. And the flight is set to take 15 hours to USA.
Maureen, what does this mean, say, for Kenyans wanting to travel to Africa as a whole and vice versa?
This means that less of fatigue. You know, earlier it used to take 25 hours when you connect to Europe and other countries. But now it is only 15 hours to get to the U.S. To Kenyans, actually, it is not just for them, but also the tourism sector will go up. Actually, the Cabinet Secretary for Tourism just said that given with the first direct flight to the U.S., already the sector has increased by 10%, given that the U.S. has the highest number of tourists visiting this country. And it will not only the tourism sector, we also have the agricultural sector where we have agricultural products such as tea and flowers that were taking between 25 to 28 hours to get to the U.S. market, given that the two will now have to shorten the flight from Nairobi to USA and from USA to Nairobi.
Maureen, I think this Kenyan Airlines direct flight to the United States will be perhaps the fifth African Airlines that is flying direct to the United States. Airport security is very important, particularly in the days of international terrorism. And I think airport security was one of the reasons, or is one of the reasons, that we don't see that many African Airlines flying direct. What does this mean in terms of security at Jomo Kenyatta International Airport?
Actually, James, remember the deals to have Kenya fly to USA was rejected in the year 2013 for not meeting the required international standards. And today, history was made in East Africa. Now Kenya becomes the second Eastern African country after Ethiopia to fly directly to USA. The Kenya Aviation Authority just said that they have already met the international standards and that Jomo Kenyatta International Airport is safe for Kenya, for Africa, and for other global countries.
Maureen, thank you very much again. Always nice to speak with you.
Okay, thanks so much, James.
That was Maureen Ojiambo on the line from Nairobi, Kenya. 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the draws for the 2018 Beach Soccer African Cup of Nations, scheduled for Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, from December the 9th to December the 14th, 2018, which took place at the weekend. In Group A, host Egypt was squared out alongside Morocco, Ivory Coast, and Madagascar, while Group B will include the 2008, 2011, 2013, and 2016 African Beach Soccer Cup of Nations winners, Senegal, 2016 runner-up Nigeria, Libya, and Tanzania. The winner and runner-up will automatically qualify to represent Africa at the 2019 FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup. Staying with football news, the Federation of Uganda Football Association has confirmed that an international friendly has been lined up for Uganda Cranes to play Nigeria Super Eagles at the Asaba Stadium on Tuesday the 20th of November 2018. The match will come up 3 days after the 2019 Total Nations Cup qualifier between Uganda Cranes and Cape Verde at the Nambole Stadium. The latest development has been confirmed by the FUFA communications manager, Ahmed Hussein. In handball news, Zamalek were crowned champions of Africa after defeating arch rivals Al Ahly 27-25 in the 2018 African Champions League final. The White Knights dominated the first half through the goals of the newly appointed captain, Ahmed Alhama, and ended it with a 13-11 lead. The Red Devils attempted to come back in the second half and almost succeeded after tying up the score 23-23, 5 minutes before the end of the match. And now to athletics news. 1 year after his compatriot Jocelyn Jepkosgei broke the women's world record at the Valencia Half Marathon, Kenya's Abraham Kiptum broke the men's world record at the IWAF Gold Labour Road Race, clocking 58 minutes 18 seconds to take 5 seconds off the mark set by Eritrea's Zassini Tadese in 2010. Ethiopia Jilete Boka clocked 1 hour, 6 minutes, 11 seconds to win the women's race ahead of UAE's Aliyah Mohamed Said, who came in 1 hour, 6 minutes, 13 seconds, and Kenya's Edith Chilimo, who clocked 1 hour, 6 minutes, 18 seconds to come third. Staying with athletics news, Ethiopian Kilikili Jizhagin won the 37th edition of the Minova Frankfurt Marathon in cool and times extremely windy conditions in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 37 seconds. After a thrilling duel, he broke away from Martin Kosgei of Kenya, who finished in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 41 seconds. Fellow Kenyan Alex Kibet finished third on his marathon debut in 2 hours, 7 minutes, 09 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Two U.S. pro-democracy groups, the International Republican Institute and the National Democratic Institute, say Zimbabwe has yet to establish a democratic culture in which parties are treated equitably and citizens can cast their vote freely. And a Kenyan Airways flight took off last night from Jomo Kenyatta International Airport on a maiden flight bound for New York City. It is the first in East and Central Africa and perhaps the fifth African airlines to fly direct to the United States. And that is it for this Monday, October 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for joining us this week. I'm James Botti in Washington. Have a great day.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic next week will be sibling rivalry. This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
A recent report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change paints a rather gloomy picture of the future of planet Earth. Hello, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Please join Peter Frumhoff from the Union of Concerned Scientists and me for the science edition of Press Conference USA when we discuss the report and its possible implications. Listen for it this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.